The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Louise Dovery Bjorkman, Judge Diane B. Bradbold, Judge Jean M. Cochran, the Honorable Louise Dovery Bjorkman presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals on this beautiful June 11th, 2020. The first matter on our calendar for oral argument today is the matter of Jeffrey Brown et al. Versus Gold Star Taxi and Transportation Service Corporation. Before we begin the argument, I want to make sure that both counsel are able to hear and see the judges. Could you just raise your hand if everything is okay? Ms. Novotny, you're able to see? Okay, yes. Perfect. And if you lose connection, indicate that by raising your hand. But we've had fairly good luck with these WebEx arguments, and I expect and hope that the same will be true today. You will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. The clerk will be displaying the time, so you'll be able to be mindful of that. It's also important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jeffrey Brown, appearing on behalf of the appellants and the plaintiffs below. Let me just start with a very succinct, I think, argument that demonstrates why the district court should be reversed. And this is stated in the Byron versus Atkin case, which is a Minnesota Supreme Court case, which it is an old case, but I think it states the standard for common law defamation fairly clearly. When it said in that case, written publications calculated to expose one to public contempt or ridicule and then induce ill opinion of him and impair him in the good opinion and respect of others are libelous, although they involve no imputation of crime and are actionable without any allegation of special damages. And so I think that's where the court actually should begin its analysis in this case. It seems as if the district court sort of ignore the elements of liability for defamation and defamation per se and went straight to the defense in this matter, and then held that, of course, what Mr. Ali stated was purely an opinion. But I think the court should actually start from whether or not, you know, it fits within the standard rules of common law defamation.
And Mr. Brown,
yes,
that's where I'm stuck, because one of the elements of a common law defamation claim, whether we're talking about defamation per se or defamation, is that it be a false statement. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at, for example, the most recent McKee case and see that our Supreme Court does say it's got to be a statement that is capable of being proven true or false. And my big question to you this morning is, how does the statement need to go back to law school? How would anyone prove that to be true or false?
Well, I think it's fairly straightforward. Number one, the district court said it was clearly false, and that's in the district court's order. But secondly, I think it's easily verifiable. If you're going to just simply ask a question whether or not a person should go to law school or need to go back to law school without any explanation as to why that is the case, that's easily verifiable. I have not heard of any instance in which a licensed attorney would need to go back to law school for any particular reason. And so I understand that, you know, that the nature of the statement is such that, there might be some question as to, you know, what it meant. But that statement is certainly not an opinion in the sense, because no one reading that would understand that to be an opinion of the respondent as a result of his adverse decision in conciliation court. I mean, there's no context that would suggest that. What it does suggest is incompetence. And I think for professionals, the line of cases in which a person has alleged that the professional is incompetent has clearly been held as defamation per se.
So that again brings me back to McKee. And I'm very familiar with McKee from its stop at our court. But there you had, you know, the statement that the doctor is a real tool. Again, that impugns someone's competence, arguably, as a doctor. And it seems to me every bit as negative as the connotation need to go back to law school. And yet our Supreme Court said that was clearly an opinion statement that cannot be defamatory. How do we square that statement because, with the argument you make?
Yeah, insults like a real tool. Those type of statements cannot be, I think, easily verifiable. What is a tool in the sense that you refer to someone as a tool? What is, you know, when you use other sort of rhetorical hyperbole to describe a person, how do you in fact verify that? All of the cases, in fact, McKee being one of them, and other cases that also talk about statements of that type, it's pretty clear that you cannot, you know, easily define whether someone is a tool or not. But you can, I think, easily define whether or not a licensed lawyer needs to go back to law school. And you have to read that in the context in which it was given. That was simply not a statement that was made sort of off the cuff. This guy was, as he stated in his declaration, he was upset and frustrated by the decision. He went out and looked for me on the internet, and then he posted that statement on my professional website, which really has nothing to do with my role as a conciliation court judge. So anyone reading that, as the district court rightly pointed out, would say, you know, this guy did something wrong to a client. Perhaps this is a dissatisfied client where, you know, something happened and he's dissatisfied with the service. I think Ms. Novotny and her argument to the court below went through another list of hypothetical scenarios where someone might interpret this as a disgruntled client in some sense. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. So, you know, that is false. And as I laid out in my arguments, both below and before this court, you know, I think that the issue here is not whether or not we can, you know, twist and turn a statement as to whether or not it's an actual factual statement like the sky is green. And we can actually say, no, the sky is actually blue. But what that implies, and it implies something of it implies incompetence. It attacks my reputation. No one reading that would say, oh, well, this guy is a good attorney. They would, in fact, say, this guy is a bad attorney. It has affected.
Does it make a difference that this statement is posted in a review section? I mean, doesn't that suggest, again, the context? And we do look at the number of factors to look at context, but doesn't that suggest the context is a statement of opinion?
I don't think so, because it's an opinion of what? I mean, Jeffrey C. Brown, PLLC, was never his attorney or his adversary. And so, you know, Mr. Ali conflated my role as a conciliation court judge with my role as a private practitioner. And that to me is very harmful, because no one would be able to determine that he's talking about me as a conciliation court judge as opposed to an advocate. And so just because it's posted under a review section, I don't think that should immunize anyone from liability for defamation. You know, things are published in the newspaper doesn't necessarily mean you're immunized from defamation liability if you can show malice, which I think malice is clearly shown in this case. So where it was posted, I don't think is all that important as opposed to what was said when it was posted. I mean, if courts are going to make a sort of say, well, it was posted under review, but even that fails actually the policy for that review section in Google. That review section in Google is to review the place. This is a location document. It's not a review of, and I stated this in my documents to the court, both courts. This is not a review of a person's competence. It's not for rants and raves. And this is exactly what this was. He searched me out on the internet, decided to make a statement that is particularly harmful to me in my practice as an attorney, as a practitioner. And he posted that on the internet. And now the defense is, well, since it's under a review, it should be excused. I don't think the law should actually operate in that fashion.
Mr. Brown, in determining whether it's a fact or opinion, does it matter whether Mr. Ali is qualified to determine whether someone needs to go back to law school or not? In other words, you know, whether he has a legal background?
Well, that's not the test for determining or distinguishing fact from opinion in Jank Law. And those four.
Do you agree then we should look at the four factors?
Actually, I don't agree with that, because those four factors are most useful when you have particular defendants in which public issues are at stake. In media defendant cases, that's where you find the use of Jank Law. In public official cases, that's where you find the use of Jank Law. And in fact, most of the cases that were cited, Larson v. Gannett, that's a media defendant case. Hunt versus University of Minnesota, this is a public employee case. Hewen versus Driscoll, a public official case. Bebo versus DeLander, it's not defamatory statements, they were mere vulgarities. Fine versus Bernstein is political speech, which cites Gertz but ignores Milkovich. Maidner versus Someplace Safe is public comment. James versus Scott County is a privilege case. And so it seems to me that in all the cases in which the Jank Law factors have been utilized, have been in those cases where there is an issue with either public comment, a public official, or something that might have some public implication. This is between private parties. And so I don't think you start from the end and work your way backwards to determine liability by stating that, well, you know, this is, you know, we should look at Jank Law first to determine whether it's opinion or fact in a common law defamation case. I think the elements of common law defamation are very clear. And you know, Mr. Ali violated each one. It's communicated to someone other than the plaintiff because it was communicated to the world on Google. The statement is false. The district court held that it's clearly false. The statement tends to harm the plaintiff's reputation and lower the plaintiff in the estimation of the community. And all of Ali's statement satisfies all three elements.
But isn't there a fourth element, and that is that the recipient of the statement reasonably understands it to be referring to a specific person? And in this case, you have a law, you know, it's your law firm that's identified. Is that, to whom does the reference to the law firm reasonably apply?
It applies to me. He went out and searched for me on the internet and actually saw my website.
I guess my question is, would someone reading his statement understand that to be referring to you or to your law firm generally, or to maybe some other lawyer in the law firm?
Well, the name of my law firm carries my name, and that's all it carries. It doesn't say Jeffrey C. Brown and Associates. It doesn't include Brown, Smith, and someone else. It only carries my name. And anybody looking at that could easily Google Jeffrey C. Brown, PLLC, if they wanted to, and find out that I'm a solo practitioner. But I think, you know, for me, it's who else would he be referring to in the context of a law firm carrying the name of a single person that's easily verifiable as a solo practitioner?
So, Mr. Brown, if we don't apply the four factors to determine opinion versus fact, what standard do you suggest we should apply?
Well, I think, as I said before, I think you should simply apply the standards for liability for common law defamation. And the only issue in this case out of the three factors, I think, is whether the statement is false. Okay. And so either from an objective point of view, as I stated below, if you're going to say that a licensed attorney has to return to law school, that is clearly false. The district court said that the statement was clearly false. I don't even think the respondents have argued that the district court was wrong in its assessment that the statement was clearly false. And so,
well, my question again, I get back to the first question I asked you. Can we say that it's, I mean, to me, it seems to fall closer to the doctor is a real tool in the sense that it's kind of nonsensical, isn't it? To say to a law firm that's in existence, need to go back to law school, when I don't think most people would understand that you ever have to go back to law school.
I understand the sort of the gymnastics that we're going through here, but quite frankly, you know, if you say that a lawyer has to return to law school, it's not just a simple statement. You're saying that that person is incompetent as a lawyer. There are underlying facts here that have that are implied that may not have been clearly stated. But if you say that, that's a reflect. And even the district court says that it suggests incompetence. Even the respondents in their briefs say it may suggest incompetence. And so I don't think that, you know, I think what, and I think again, you know, the issue is, well, how is that statement going to be viewed by someone, by the normal, sort of a normal person reading that on Google? Is that going to suggest that that is not an attack on that person's reputation? If you say an attorney needs to go back to law school, that is a direct attack on that person's reputation and his ability, in my case, as a solo practitioner, to make an honest living at that profession.
What if the statement had been that Jeffrey Brown is an incompetent lawyer? Is that opinion or is that a statement of verifiable fact?
I think what, under the circumstances, okay, that would be not be an opinion because it's an opinion that's not based on any reasonable interaction with me as an advocate or an adversary. This reflects on my law firm and my private practice, not on my role as a conciliation court judge. Now, I think what could have, what might have insulated him, Ali, from liability in this case, if he had simply said, I went to conciliation court, the judge ruled against me, or this judge ruled against me, I think that judgment was wrong, and he's incompetent. Because then you put in their critical facts that you have included in your commentary, in your that might tell a reader, well, this is something different than just a mere insult. And I think this goes back to, well, one of the things I ran across I didn't cite was a treatise.
Counsel, I know that you've exceeded your time, and I'll let you finish up your sentence because you were responding to my question, but then you will have 5 more minutes for rebuttal. So okay. If you want to finish that, okay. You want to save it?
Well, no, I just want to say this. In a Carter Ruck treatise on libel and slander, I found this statement where it says, the U.S. version of opinion defense is derived from the fair comment and criticism under English common law. And under that sort of reasoning, you have to make an honest comment. It must be a fair criticism. And so this was certainly not an honest or fair criticism. Okay. It was an insult.
All right. Thank you. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. All right. Counsel for respondent. You are on mute. It happens all the time. Yes.
I thought I clicked it. Good morning. My name is Tamara Novotny, and I represent Gold Star Taxi and Nabil Ali. I think the question that the court is presented with is whether in Minnesota protection is afforded for statements that ordinary persons would understand within their context to be a statement of opinion, not a statement of fact. And when you look at the decisions that have been issued by this court now over decades, as well as the Minnesota Supreme Court, I think the answer quite clearly is yes.
And you know, I'm going to stop you right now. I'm getting some feedback, and I'm wondering, Mr. Brown, if you could turn the mic, if you could turn off your mic or put it on mute. That sometimes helps if most of us do that. Okay, let's proceed. Maybe I was the only one hearing the feedback, but I certainly was. Ms. Navad. You may continue.
So as I was saying, I think when you look at the cases issued by both this court as well as the Minnesota Supreme Court, the answer to that question is yes. And we've cited a number of cases in our brief, including the McKee case, including the Generations Law Office case that this court decided just last year. And these cases involve statements made against professionals. They involve statements made in private, non-public matters. And the courts have continued to say we afford protection for opinions.
But it seems to me, I understand, and it is the critical question here, I think, but the statement in McKee, the doctor is a real tool, seems to me to be qualitatively different than the statement need to go back to law school, in the sense that, you know, if somebody's credentials had lapsed or something, I mean, it seems to me that can, the statement made in this case by your client falls farther or closer to a, something that can be verifiable and thus constitute a statement that can be proven false or true, versus just the doctor's a real tool, which everyone knows is an expression, not the a fact that he is an instrument, like a wrench or a hammer. Why am I wrong? Why is McKee more like this case than dislike this case?
Well, I don't disagree that the statement of McKee, I think, is a clearer statement of true opinion. But I think when you walk through the analysis, you still end up in the same place. Again, the context is so important. You know, in McKee, obviously, the court talked about whether a defamatory meaning is conveyed depends on how ordinary persons understand the language used in light of the surrounding circumstances. And the Generations Law Office case, which involved unfavorable statements about a lawyer, including calling the lawyer saying he was lying and deceptive, treacherous, a crook. There, the court found that there was no defamation claim, that in context, the audience would understand those were not representations of fact. And here, the fact that this statement was posted in a review, I think, is critical. You know, I think we all understand that a review, by definition, by common sense, is where someone expresses an opinion. It's an evaluation, both good and bad, that is based on the writer or the speaker's subjective viewpoint or their experience. You know, we all inherently understand if we're reading a book review or we're looking at a restaurant review on Yelp or a product review on Amazon, or a review about a business. You know, there's reviews about my client's taxi business that are online, or if we're looking up a car repair service. We understand what we're reading is.
I understand that, you know, that there is some context that is provided by a statement made in a review section of a website or whatever, or the newspaper or whatever. But I mean, does that authorize the writer, the speaker, the person making the statement to say things that are verifiably false? I mean, what if the statement here was Jeffrey Brown graduated last in his law school class? That could be, and it's dead wrong and can be proven dead wrong. Are you saying just because that's in a review section, it's opinion and thus protected from liability?
I think it's a significant factor in terms of determining how is the ordinary person going to read and interpret and understand that. But that's not everything. Obviously, there are other factors that the courts do consider. And I think, as I believe it was you noted, you know, this statement is not particularly specific or precise. In fact, it doesn't even refer to Mr. Brown specifically. And I think the lack of precision also impacts whether it is in fact verifiable, you know, whether someone can truly determine is it true or false, because that depends on how someone interprets it or reads it. You know, if someone reads it as, you know, well, does Mr. Brown in fact have to go back to law school? Well, I think we can agree he does not. But, you know, part of the context here is that the reader of that review can also click into Mr. Brown's website, and they can see that he graduated from law school. They can see that he is qualified to practice law. And so they can easily discern this is not a factual statement by someone. They can discern that this is likely, you know, someone who's just dissatisfied with Mr. Brown, whether it's in his role as a lawyer or in his role as a judge, both of which he highlights on that website.
So you're suggesting that because the statement could be easily shown to be false, that it means it's an opinion?
No, well, I'm saying it depends on how someone reads it. I mean, if someone is going to read that, they can read it and discern from the fact that because it's really not factually accurate, and they can discern that this is someone who is expressing dissatisfaction, expressing frustration. If we take it out of this context, that maybe hits home for all of us, but, you know, if we all went out to dinner, now that I guess we sort of can do that, and maybe we walk out of the restaurant and we're completely, you know, frustrated and unhappy because we had, you know, a really bad meal that we paid a lot of money for. And if I turn to you or I go to Yelp and I write, that chef needs to go back to culinary school. You know, I think most people are going to understand, you know, am I making a factual statement? Do I even know if the chef went to culinary school or not? No. Within context, they're going to understand or interpret that as I'm expressing dissatisfaction or some frustration with my experience. And again, it's very subjective. The next person may think that was the best restaurant ever. So I do think the context matters. And I think that the fact that this wasn't precise matters. And, you know, certainly if someone interprets this as someone is dissatisfied with Mr. Brown, well, you can't verify that. You know, that is obviously entirely opinion, whether someone was satisfied or not satisfied. And, you know, the statement is he needs to go back to law school. Well, does that simply suggest that, you know, maybe he needs to get a refresher on some rules or procedure or something like that? Again, that is something that is very hard to verify. I mean, we all need continuing education and refreshers on certain things. So, you know, it becomes this very difficult statement to prove one way or the other.
So Ms. Novotny, I'd like to follow up on your comments about dissatisfaction. So I think they're similar to what Mr. Brown is arguing when he says that this statement implies incompetence. So, but pushing you a little bit on this, these statements were made by someone who has never retained or even been in a courtroom against Mr. Brown as an advocate, but they were posted on his business or law firm website. So is that another element of falsity about these statements? Because they're a review that implies, as you just said, dissatisfaction with Mr. Brown as an attorney, but that is actually not their relationship at all. It is one where the reviewer is actually unhappy with Mr. Brown as a conciliation court judge. So again, that's verifiable, right? We know the relationship between the reviewer and Mr. Brown, and by posting on his law firm website, is the reviewer in another different way falsely making a representation that he has an opinion about Mr. Brown as an attorney? So I'll go on mute to listen to your answer.
And I'm not sure if I said that it necessarily implies only that he might be dissatisfied with Mr. Brown as an attorney. As we've argued to the court below and we submitted within the record, I don't think Mr. Brown can have it both ways. He does, of course, highlight the fact that he's a lawyer on his website, but he also talks about, in at least a couple of occasions, a couple of locations, the fact that he also serves as a Hennepin County Conciliation Court judge. So I don't think it is entirely inappropriate to express your view about his performance as a judge on the very same website that Mr. Brown highlights that fact, seemingly to, you know, attract customers or people, you know, to do business with. So I don't think that necessarily suggests, you know, something false. I think this case really is boiling down to, you know, Mr. Brown obviously just does not like the statement that Mr. Ali posted. He does not like the way that he expressed his opinion in this review. He said to the district court, for example, that to be a fair review or a fair critique, Mr. Ali needed to be a little bit more circumspect in his language. But I don't think the courts necessarily want to be, you know, the word police necessarily. Again, anytime you're reading a review, it's a critique, it's an evaluation. We all want them to be really good and favorable and saying nothing but great things about us, but the risk of a review, the risk of an opinion is that they may be negative, they may be unfavorable, they may be unflattering. You know, that doesn't necessarily lead us to a defamation claim. Again, my restaurant example, if I, you know, go write on a Yelp review that chef needs to go back to culinary school, are we going to say that opens the door to a defamation per se claim? I don't think so. Anytime that someone might write something that, you know, they had a bad experience, I don't think that that gets us to defamation. It certainly has.
Unless it's if the statement was the chef did not graduate from culinary arts school and in fact the chef had graduated, would that be an actionable statement in your view? Even if it's on a review website?
That would probably be closer. I mean, certainly saying did not graduate, I think that's a little bit more factually specific. But, you know, I'd have to go through all of the analysis because, you know, again, is it specific? How are people going to understand it? You know, that's a little bit closer, I think, than what we have here. Again, he needs to go back to law school. Well, like Mr. Brown has said, anyone probably going to know that if you're a licensed attorney, you probably don't have to technically go back to law school. But what do you mean by that? Do you just, again, mean he actually has to go back because he never finished? Or do you mean he needs to go back because, you know, he needs, again, a refresher? There was something that he didn't do correctly or didn't do particularly well in that writer or that speaker's position, their opinion.
Ms. Novotny, I have a question for you, kind of relating to the points you just made. The district court on page 7 of its order states clearly the statement is not a statement of fact, but the district court also states that the statement is negative and unflattering and clearly false. So how do you reconcile those two statements or findings by the district court?
Well, I think we can all agree it's unflattering. But again, critiques and reviews are going to be unflattering. I think the statement that it's false, again, that depends, I think, on the perspective, because the court talked about, you know, that it's false, but then the court also explained that it could be understood as expressing dissatisfaction, which is not something that is necessarily true or false or verifiable. So I would agree it's a little bit, you know, difficult to blend those two ideas together, but I think the end decision was correct in that, you know, the context, the lack of precision, you know, the fact that this is, you know, seemingly a non-expert, so to speak, that is writing this. I mean, there's nothing to suggest that this is the, you know, Minnesota Board of Practitioners writing this statement to suggest they actually know, you know, whether Mr. Brown needs to go to law school, if they have some insider information. So I think all of those things together support the district court's decision and its finding that this is, you know, putting all of the factors together, it is simply opinion. That's how it's going to be understood. That, you know, is it stated perhaps in an exaggerated, hyperbolic, sarcastic manner? Sure. Could Mr. Ali have said, pressed the same point in probably a million different ways? Yes. But is that what the courts are really going to get into, is picking apart how someone expresses a review, how they express an opinion? All right. I don't know if they want to do so.
All right. Counsel, your time is up, but I'm going to ask, do the panel members have any additional questions for Ms. Novotny? All right. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Brown, you will have the last word.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. A couple of points here. You know, we've gotten into a lot of hypotheticals about how this could be construed by someone, but I think really what you need to look at is how this can be reasonably construed by somebody who reads this. And someone that reasonably reads this and might come to a reasonable conclusion as to what it means will come to the conclusion that this is, just like the district court said, and also Ms. Novotny, this is a dissatisfied customer who did something wrong, and that's why I'm posting that. Well, that is not true. And I think the court recognizes this. And on this action of review, I mean, just because it's posted under review, I don't see how that really matters whether or not any statement posted under review can be defamatory or not. I mean, what if someone says, I went to a restaurant and they served bad food, but in fact, they never went to that restaurant. They're only doing that in retaliation for some grudge that they may have against the owner or someone else there. Would that be defamatory? I think it would be. And this is exactly sort of, that's parallel, I think, to the case that we have here, is that Mr. Ali posted on my website, basically, that I need to go to law school, not because of any relationship that him and I had, but because he was dissatisfied with one of my opinions. Well, and so,
Mr. Brown, Ms. Novotny pointed out that your website, in fact, lists your service as a conciliation court judge as part of your practice of law. I mean, how do you respond to that argument?
Yeah, because it doesn't. Here's the thing. He didn't post that on my professional website that I have. I have jeffercbrown.com as my professional website. This Google page that he posted it on is only for people looking for me and where my office is. On that website, Google's website, I have no mention of what I do as an attorney, at least as far as I'm concerned. I don't think any evidence has been, you know, presented to show that. I think what Ms. Novotny is saying, that because it's those statements are on my professional website, jeffercbrownlaw.com or jcbrownlaw.com, that somehow that website and the Google website are synonymous. And that's not the case. There's nothing on Google that I'm aware of that says, other than sort of searching for me, but on this particular website where this remark was posted, it doesn't say anything about me being a conciliation court judge.
It just says that where your office is located.
That's right. So, and that's it. And so it doesn't state on that, because that's not my website, but it is a website that identifies the location of my law firm. And that's where the review is posted. And according to Google's policies, any review posted on that web, on that page, should relate to the place, not to the person. So, but I think, you know, really this case falls squarely within Wiseman case that this court has previously decided, and Bradley. We shouldn't get off into the weeds on opinion in a case that is between private parties, and the defamatory statement is clear on its face. I mean, you know, those cases say that there's no dichotomy. There shouldn't be an artificial, I guess, dichotomy between opinion and fact. And Milkovich is the one case that clearly said, when Gertz went off on that dicta and brought up the issue of opinion, courts then used that dicta in Gertz to create this brand new defense based on opinion. Milkovich says that that doesn't even exist. And this court in Weissman and Bradley agreed with that. And so I think, again, instead of focusing on opinion in this case, the focus should be on whether or not it fits the elements of defamation. And keep in mind as well,
would you agree that the McKee case is between private parties?
Well, yeah. But, you know,
in that case, doesn't the court focus on the distinction between opinion and fact?
And I think, as I said in my brief, that it did not need to reach the same conclusion. It could have simply said that the statement was not. I think what I said is that because a real tool is not verifiable, it's merely an opinion. And that was, you know, so there really was not a focus on whether or not it was opinion. That was a conclusion that the court reached, because being a real tool is not verifiably false, or can be verified as either true or false. And the thing about falsity in the defamation context is not whether or not it is objectively false. The issue is whether or not it's substantially true. And I don't think you can look at the comment that Mr. Ali said and say that that is a substantially true statement, that I need to go back to law school.
Okay, I think your time has expired, Mr. Brown. Do either of the panelists have additional questions? All right. Thank you. Thank you both, counsel, for your helpful arguments today. The case was well presented. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will take a short recess as we